Well, Australian federal political focus was very much on the Prime Minister's travels to the G7 summit in Canada. For the first time since the election, Anthony Albanese was all set to meet the US President face-to-face on the sidelines of the summit before Donald Trump's abrupt departure turned itineraries upside down. It's left key questions on AUKUS, trade and the Middle East unanswered and cast a long shadow over the domestic political agenda. Well, let's unpack the week with our very own political correspondent, Melissa Clark. Mel, good morning again.
Thanks, Sal.
Along with Josh Butler, a federal political reporter at The Guardian. Josh, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
And Sarah Eisen, federal politics reporter and acting Canberra Bureau Chief at The Australian. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, Sarah, if we start with you, the week began with a lot of anticipation for the PM, but it failed to materialise. How important was this meeting with Donald Trump going to be for Anthony Albanese, in your view?
Look, I think it was pretty important, particularly when you hear from former advisers to Trump, or, you know, Joe Hockey earlier this week made some points about this in terms of the relationship building exercise with Donald Trump and how important it is to get the FaceTime. I think it was a former national security advisor who earlier this week said Donald Trump learns conversationally, which was a phrase I hadn't quite heard before, but I think what it means is, you know, getting face-to-face with him is really important. Now, that said, as much as it was a shock that he pulled out of the G7, Albanese was second or even last on the agenda for Donald Trump at the G7. It was already looking like something that might not happen. So that was a concern. And secondly, you know, there is a lot made of the missed meeting, but there's also a bit of commentary at the moment about how much risk even a meeting holds. We've seen that with Zelensky. We've seen that with others. And there are a number of countries, more so in different parts of Asia, who are keeping their heads down for this reason, for this wanting to avoid the Zelensky moment in the chair. And, you know, Australia and America are very close allies, but Trump is unpredictable. And depending on how that goes, you know, you could have the president really saying, while you're being recorded by cameras, you're not spending enough on defence. Why aren't you doing that? And it just starting to blow up and becoming not a good thing, but a bad. So I think it was significant, but it's not just a black and white, it was only going to be good, it would only have been a positive sort of formula, I suppose.
Josh, I wanted to ask you, Plan B has been floated, which is Anthony Albanese considering a visit to Europe and the NATO meeting in The Hague next week, if he can secure a meeting with the US president. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think they've sort of cooled on that idea a little bit. I think that was like initially when it was announced that Trump wouldn't be having this meeting, when he's going home early. Albanese himself even said at a press conference very shortly afterwards, you know, will you be going to the NATO conference? And, you know, we're thinking about it, giving it strong consideration. It seems like they've kind of cooled on that idea a little bit. I could sort of see the logic in that. I mean, like how, you know, it's sort of debatable, as Sarah's talked about, you know, debatable the importance of missing the meeting this time around at the G7. Like, you know, there were other bigger, more, you know, globally powerful countries that also missed out on a similar meeting. The Middle East conflict obviously being a very good reason to go home early. But if Albanese chased him all the way across the world to The Hague, to NATO, and then didn't get a meeting again, I think that would look, you know, pretty bad. I think that as Sarah mentioned, I mean, obviously there is an impetus and like a real sort of, I'm not sure urgency is the right word, but a real keenness to kind of have that meeting, even just as a box ticking kind of exercise to say that we've had the meeting, we'll get the meeting before this AUKUS review at least is finalised in the next however long couple of weeks. I think there does seem to be a real keenness to have the meeting in whatever form, and it might not be at NATO, but I think they're really interested to have one shortly.
The only thing about the main leader's point that Josh makes, though, is that other big leaders that missed out, Mexican president,
have had other meetings,
Well, not just have had other meetings, but got a call from Trump after their meetings were cancelled.
Yeah, right.
This is the other thing, right? That Albanese had his meeting cancelled, like the Mexicans did, like Modi did, but the other leaders then got a call from Trump. Mm.
The issue here is it looks worse than it actually is.
Yeah.
It's the vision of it that looks terrible, that isn't helped by the fact that Anthony Albanese made a great deal of his relationship with Joe Biden. Mm. So he set the standard as, I have a great relationship with Joe Biden, that's great for Australia. Mm. That then, of course, inevitably leads to the question of, well, you don't have have a relationship with Donald Trump, so that can't be good for us. I think it looks worse than it actually is, though, because we see the strategy they're taking is working the back channels. That was a successful strategy in Trump's first term for the Australian government to focus on working Congress, to focus on working advisors in the White House. They're clearly taking that approach again this time around. But yeah, having set the standard that meetings and personal relationships are important with Joe Biden, he now has to meet the own standard that he has set for himself
and
in that
dispel
regard.
The concern around some Labor figures, including Kevin Rudd, having made some disparaging comments about Trump in the past. And that's a hard one to then wear as a Labor government and having appointed Kevin Rudd as your ambassador.
Mel, when we're looking at the Middle East in particular, what is the federal government's position? It was not that long ago that we were having sanctions imposed on two Israeli government ministers. Australia was calling initially for restraint and de-escalation. Where does that leave us in our relationship with the United States?
There's parts where we're trying to work in concert and parts where we're trying to strike out with other global leaders. So when it comes to those sanctions that were placed on to Israeli ministers, we were doing that in concert with the UK and Canada, New Zealand and Norway. This was a clear break from the US over Israel's approach in Gaza. And I think we have seen for some time that, and we've seen that through various votes at the UN, for example, that Australia has taken a different position from the US. But when it comes to what Israel is currently doing in Iran and the strikes that are taking place there, the potential for the US to be involved in escalating them, the Australian government hasn't really picked a side to sit on at this point. The language has changed a little bit, as we've discussed on the show during the week, Sally, from the government initially just saying everyone needs to de-escalate and get back to the negotiating table to now it's incumbent upon Iran to trigger that process of coming back to the table. But the Australian government is clearly having a bit of a hands-off while they, like everyone else, waits to see what Donald Trump does.
Josh, I'm interested to hear what your view is of that change in language during the week from de-escalation to Iran needs to go into an unconditional ceasefire.
It's the government is sort of running this. Both sides are on web, but they're sort of saying there needs to be this negotiation. Doesn't look back to the negotiating table. Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. Iran must stand down this program. Penny Wong, it's always very interesting to see the sort of the way they speak about this in, you know, diplomatic kind of language. Penny Wong, all through the week, asked a number of times about, you know, do we support Israel's right to, you know, launch these attacks, to start this conflict, all these sort of things. Said, you know, we're not a major player in the Middle East. We, you know, want to see, you know, no risk of regional escalation and that sort of thing. This point around the unconditional surrender, though, I mean, obviously people are, you know, I know I'm doing this when I wake up each morning. I sort of, you know, one of the first things I do is check all the news alerts about what Donald Trump has said overnight and, you know, his Truth Social accounts of, you know, what he's posted on his own social media channels. And this sort of escalating rhetoric around unconditional surrender, like, I don't, you know, he's saying, I don't want a ceasefire, I want this unconditional, like, back down, basically, that there can be no other option other than a complete unconditional, you know, zero anything else back down from Iran, I think does put things in a more sort of tense situation, that it's not like everyone needs to get together around the table and have a good chat and you know, go their separate ways. It's like we need a specific result from Iran, a specific, you know, course of action from Iran to move this on and to get the result that the US obviously thinks is the most optimal one.
Sarah, this morning we heard from US Congressman Joe Courtney, who's a strong supporter of AUKUS in Congress, kind of taking the temperature with him while this review is underway from the Pentagon about the level of support for AUKUS. What sort of signals have we been getting from the United States as to whether, it's almost the question, are we still good?
Yeah. I think he mentioned a couple in terms of the Defence Secretary the day after that a review was announced, speaking very positively of AUKUS, but more significantly, maybe, or interestingly, was Keir Starmer meeting with Donald Trump a few days ago before Donald Trump left the G7, and they were asked about AUKUS, and you could see Keir kind of looking to Donald Trump, and you could see Donald sort of going, "Yep, go ahead." And Keir said, you know, we're committed to it and this and that. It's a great deal. And Donald Trump didn't intervene. He didn't critique. He didn't do any of that. So I think that was a clear signal. And a lot of people in the defence and foreign affairs community don't see this as a Trump review. They see this as a Bridge Colby review, and that being quite different. Someone yesterday from the US Study Centre said, oh, Sarah, you have to think like who Bridge Colby is. It's like the second in command at DFAT. Like if that guy was doing a review, it wasn't, you know, would you be that worried kind of thing? That said, it is also an opportunity potentially for the US to again prosecute the point that Australia isn't spending enough on defence or isn't maybe being clear enough on its stance when it comes to a potential conflict in the region, you know, Taiwan, China. I think it would be almost a surprise to a lot of onlookers if those points weren't made in the review, even really passingly. So I don't think the future of AUKUS is doomed. I think it's very likely still going to be on. There might be some tweaks on the side. It's more than just the submarines. There's tech deals, there's quantum, there's heaps going on here. So there's room to move. But regarding language and an opportunity to re-prosecute some of the US concerns in a pretty big formal way, in a Pentagon review, I think that's something that we very much might see by, I think it's next month, it's due.
That's right. And I think this issue is a really good example of why the face-to-face meeting between Anthony Albanese and Donald Trump matters, is because without any direct information, words from the president's mouth himself, we're reduced to this, look at the body language. He looked at Keir Starmer. He didn't seem to be objecting to it, so we're going to take that as a sign that he's okay. You know, we're sort of in criminology land here of trying to read the body language to get a sense of what the policy is. I just think that's a good example of why a face-to-face meeting so would be important. Really helpful to actually hear words, have that said from the man himself, and that would calm down a lot of the angst that we're seeing about it instead of having to interpret the body language to get our policy signals from the US.
Totally. Josh, very generously, I'm going to give you our final 30 seconds. How are you seeing it?
Yeah, I do like the reading of the tea leaves, as Mel's been talking about. Look, you know, I think all the points have been covered here. I think, you know, until we sort of hear some more concrete feelings out of the US of what they might want, what additional they might want, I think it's very easy to forget that we are giving them quite a lot of money for these submarines, for the ones that we're buying, you know, off the shelf, the secondhand ones, plus also we're giving them money to upgrade their submarine, you know, industrial capacity over there in the US. It is a pretty good deal for the US, and I do wonder if the end of this might be that we end up giving the US more money or more resources or more, you know, things to keep the deal that we've already got in, because the US does seem to have us over a barrel on this.
Josh, thank you so much for that. Josh Butler is political reporter from The Guardian. Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah Eisen is federal political reporter for The Australian and currently acting Canberra bureau chief for the Oz. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thanks, I'll get back to it.
You better get back to it. Your phone has been pinging as we've been talking. And Mel Clark, thank you again.
Thanks.
You're listening to ABC Radio National. On air, online and on the ABC Listen app.